In this first half of our state capitol report this hour, we'll get a roundup of the top state issues in the news from our state government reporter, Sean Johnson. And in our second half of the state capitol report after 7:30, we will welcome your questions for Democratic State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee, the Senate's minority leader. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, April 22nd. If you have a question about what's going on under the state capitol dome, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, and he joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
So the Joint Finance Committee wrapped up its fourth and final public hearing last week, and now it's going to start voting on the budget already.
Yeah, kind of agency by agency. They've got a handful of agencies coming up this week, including probably most notably the Department of Natural Resources, also Military Affairs and Tourism. They're going to be up for votes on this Thursday, where so they basically, you know, the vote on they can kind of break it out as much as they want in terms of what pieces of those budgets they vote on.
And that's how this works, sort of agency by agency, just cutting or approving their budget request.
Right. And so you see some of the – usually it's some of the less controversial ones first, not that the DNR isn't without controversy, but, you know, the fact that it's going first is maybe a sign that there's nothing no big change is going to happen there. But we'll find out Thursday.
Well, speaking of controversy, a big controversy involving this audit of the UW system that found nearly $650 million in reserves. What's going on there?
Yeah, I can tell you the reaction to it immediately among Republican leaders, including the governor, was that now that we've seen this, I think we ought to really look at a tuition freeze for the next couple years for the UW. And so what do they see? They saw a Fiscal Bureau memo that came out. It was released to the public on Friday showing reserves in the UW's accounts totaling, you know, if you take out the federal funds that are already allocated for other things, you can't do anything with them, about $648 million. And so, you know, Republicans, as I said, from the governor down to the speaker said that, you know, they were outraged to see that kind of a cash balance. And this is Assembly Speaker Robin Voss.
I'm disappointed. I'm frustrated. And I think ultimately this is a huge black eye on the UW system. We know that they insisted that they had to have much larger than inflation tuition increases to make sure that they didn't harm the quality of the UW system's programs, while at the same time they were socking that money away in a savings account to generate some sort of reserve. If I were a family who had kids in college, I would certainly be outraged.
So what is the explanation from the UW system?
Well, the UW says that you have to really drill down on that number even more, that of the, you know, $648 million in reserves, they have about $440 million of that is already, you know, set aside for other programs. And so the real number in terms of reserves they have is more along the lines of $207 million. So UW spokesman Dave Giroux said, you know, that's kind of where the discussion should start.
Really, what we're talking about is a much, much smaller number. Well, that leads us to the conversation about what should the number be? What's an appropriate level of reserve funding for an organization that serves 180,000 students with an annual budget approaching $6 billion? Should we zero out the checkbook every year, or should we maintain some cash balance as a hedge against future uncertainty?
You know, Sean, I should have mentioned that both you and I are employees of the University of Wisconsin.
It's probably a good story to do it on, yes.
Yeah. And we are employees of the University of Wisconsin Extension. And what is so what's next with this? What might happen now?
Well, the UW is usually one of the later agencies to be voted on by the legislature's budget committee. But it's up to them to decide if they want to put, I mean, it's up to the full legislature and the governor to decide if they want to put some kind of a cap on tuition. The UW, you know, this was going to be they were potentially not going to have any cap on their tuition this time. We're going to have that flexibility to decide what worked for them. They actually came out with their own memo ahead of the Fiscal Bureau stuff on Friday saying, we think that if this budget is held intact with funding, you're looking at 2% tuition increases in each of the 2 years of this budget. Would have been lower than they've seen in many years, and the UW still thinks that that's an option. But I can tell you that, you know, the governor, the speaker, even a Democratic lawmaker, Corey Mason, who sits on the legislature's budget committee, are saying we need to look at freezing tuition and possibly even reducing tuition, some lawmakers are saying. So it seems like it seems to have shifted the discussion pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I mean, partly it's because if you look in that reserve fund, there is, you know, about $414 million of that that larger figure that we mentioned earlier comes from tuition. So, I mean, there that is, you know, the biggest chunk of that funding.
No one is saying let's cut the amount of money we're going to allow or give the UW, are they?
I have not heard that yet. Mm-hmm. It seems to be focusing on tuition that, you know, some lawmakers, Senator Glenn Grothman said, let's roll back the tuition increase from the last biennium. But yeah, UW is getting $180 million roughly in new money in this next biennium. A lot of that's already allocated for, you know, employee wages because they're divvying up, you know, employee wage money differently than they have in the past because of the way that because of what Act 10 did with you know, collective bargaining and everything. So,
and do you know offhand, Sean, do most state agencies keep some sort of reserve, or do they zero out every?
Well, UW is different than your average agency because it's not relying strictly on state funding. In fact, it's relying less and less on state funding as a percentage of its overall budget. It gets federal funds, it gets, you know, it gets grant funding, it gets tuition money, you know, so gifts, it gets its funding from a variety of places. And so it, you know, it has the ability to, you know, hang on to some of that what's called program revenue when it builds its budget. You know, it's not like state government, which if you're an agency that gets its money from the state's general fund, you rely on, you know, the state legislature and the governor to set aside your, you know, quote, rainy day fund. And so the state government has about $125 million in that fund right now. It's the largest it's been, but as a percentage of the overall budget, it's pretty small.
You told us last week that there was going to be some sort of legislative action on this bill that would shrink the pay and the responsibilities of the Milwaukee County Board. What happened?
Yeah, this was delayed in the assembly last week. Essentially, they took it up. The assembly appeared poised to pass it. You know, Republicans have big numbers in that chamber, and it was supported by it was supported by, among others, Joe Sanfilippo. He's the author of the bill. He's a former Milwaukee County supervisor, Republican lawmaker now, and he told reporters at a press conference it was going to result in a more efficient government.
County department heads are going to find it much easier to run their departments because they're going to take direction from one person instead of 19. Citizens will no longer be spending an extra $4 million running a county board that they don't need to run right now, and that money is going to be able to be spent on more services in the community.
And, you know, so why is that? Well, partly it's going to cut into the county board's budget, the amount of money they have to, you know, spend on their priorities significantly. It would set up a referendum where voters of Milwaukee County could decide to cut Milwaukee County Board pay by about half. But, you know, significantly, as far as what Sanfilippo is talking about there, it would be a cut to their responsibilities, that a lot of the things that they're in charge of now or that they do jointly with the county executive would be under the control of the county executive, who is now Chris Abele.
I don't quite understand this, Sean. Why is the state legislature, in quotation marks, meddling with what's going on in the Milwaukee County Board?
Well, I mean, that is the question that critics of this are asking. They're saying that this is a local issue, should be handled locally, and that if you come from Milwaukee County now, it could be your county later. The response to that by Republicans is that Milwaukee County is who has these unique problems in terms of the size of its budget. But, you know, it is the state's largest county, so it's got a unique set of challenges as well. But definitely Milwaukee Democrats who spoke on this in the assembly floor last week, including Fred Kessler, said that this went against the old Republican mantra of local control.
This is being offered by people who pretend or allege that they're truly conservatives. And what this bill reminds me of is a degree of hypocrisy. This isn't a conservative bill. This is a radical bill.
So the Senate will be taking this, Senate committee will be taking up this bill this week?
Yeah, and a quick apology. I said last week that this vote was going to happen on Tuesday. So if you cleared your calendars on Tuesday and went down there and sat outside the assembly chamber, apologies for that. It was Wednesday. I can tell you this week, and a Senate committee is going to take it up on Wednesday morning. And that was really where the question mark was with this bill, is what's going to happen with the Senate. Just getting a Wednesday committee hearing does not mean that it's on its way. But, you know, if they weren't seriously considering it, it wouldn't be getting a hearing in the Senate.
Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. He is bringing us up to date on last week's top state stories and telling us what's on tap this week as well. And we welcome your input, your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be cloudy and mild, a chance of rain. We can expect high temperatures today in the 50s. It's now 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, April 22nd. This is our state capitol report coming up after 7:30. We will welcome in the Senate's minority leader, Democratic State Senator Chris Larson of Milwaukee. He'll react to a lot of the issues making news at the state capitol and also tell us about a hearing that the Democrats are holding on the state budget. That's going to be tomorrow in Madison. Right now we're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. He's bringing us up to date on the happenings, the debates under the state capitol dome. And also last week, Sean, the assembly passed a bill to crack down on food stamp trafficking. What's going to happen?
Yeah, what this bill will do is make it a crime in state law for anyone to buy or sell food stamps or exchange them for other goods. And this is something, you know, you've heard a number of Republicans talking about food stamps this session. This is one of the bills they're talking about. It's sponsored by Powers Lake Republican Samantha Kirkman, who says really the genesis of this is that she hears a lot from constituents who say that, you know, when they hear about you know, potential fraud in the food share program, it makes them angry.
I want people who get this benefit, who really, really, truly need this benefit, to have access to it. I do not want people who are frauding the system and spending it on other things.
So the question is this going to make any changes to what, you know, the way we run things right now, or is it going to result in new prosecutions? And we don't know. That's questionable because this is already a federal law. District attorneys say they're already using state laws on the book, on the books right now, to prosecute, you know, food stamp fraud. And so, you know, essentially there are ways that prosecutors have to get at this right now, and they say that they are. And that's something that was pointed out by Racine Democrat Corey Mason.
We have a bill in front of us to make something illegal, which is already illegal. To make fraud, which already has state and federal statutes behind it, really, really illegal, just to make sure that everybody knows where we stand on this issue.
Sean, what happened with the bill that Representative Dean Crawford is authoring that would limit the amount of junk food that you can buy with food stamps?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that other than the votes in the committees on that was delayed. So it signals a work in progress usually.
So is Governor Walker back from his trip to China?
He should be back today. Yeah, he's gone for a little more than a week in China. And during one of his conference calls last week, It was asked about what was the pressing issue of that day. It was the day after the U.S. Senate had defeated a number of gun control measures, including background checks for all gun purchases. It would extend background checks, would have extended background checks to internet gun sales or to gun shows. Right now, they're just at federally licensed gun dealers. And so the governor was asked, with the defeat of that bill in the Senate, was he any more likely to support background checks in Wisconsin? Here's what he said.
In our case in Wisconsin, we have an aggressive background check system that works to block out felons and individuals who've been commended for mental illness issues. Certainly things that go beyond that, as I point out in the past, if you're going to address this, doing it state by state really doesn't add a whole lot beyond what states already have.
And so, you know, Democrats, though, are saying that they're gonna push this measure at the state level that would require all the gun purchases in Wisconsin to go through a federally licensed dealer. So, you know, in effect, that would make the internet gun purchases or the purchases at a gun shows not stand up because you know those don't go through those channels. And you know, he had Democratic Mayor Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who's part of this national consortium of mayors who are pushing for gun control, saying, you know, this issue would be back. There are going to be further tragedies, and this wouldn't be the last that you heard of background checks, especially since, you know, polls show that 80-90% of the public supports them.
It may be gone for a week. It may be gone for a month. It may be gone for the session. I don't know the answer to that question. But I know that this issue is not over. This is not done.
So, Sean, I was talking with the Capitol reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on Friday. We were talking about their book, More Than They Bargained For. And they had mentioned that a prominent political scientist named Governor Walker the front runner of the presidential race already.
Yeah, and you can question the value of lists like these in 2013 for a race in 2016. It's probably smart to be skeptical of anything that comes out now, but a lot of people watch what Larry Sabato says. He's one of those, you know, kind of one of those national pundits that seems to carry some sway, and he listed Governor Walker in his top tier of presidential candidates. And just to put that in some context, I think he had Paul Ryan down in tier three, basically saying that, you know, his run with the Romney campaign had, you know, decreased his stock essentially. And so, you know, Larry Sabato, the governor has Larry Sabato's attention. He compared him to a couple people, Obi-Wan Kenobi, because,
really?
Yeah, because of something that Obi-Wan says to Darth Vader before Darth tries to strike him down. So, I don't think I'll get into that too much more, but he also compared him to Tim Pawlenty, because Tim Pawlenty is a Midwest governor, and that was not a compliment. That was saying that, you know, nothing against Tim Pawlenty, but he didn't have he didn't go very far. He didn't, you know, kind of have the ability to make speeches to move conservative audiences.
Say, I saw some headlines regarding this this lawsuit over redistricting, and there was some news there.
Yeah, new court filings. This was reported by a couple of papers. New court filings are alleging that these files, digital files related to redistricting, were deleted in, you know, in a couple batches, basically.
Not just a couple.
No. They're talking about you know, thousands of redistricting records. And one of the times that the complaint alleges they were deleted was right before they were asked for. By a court, or right after they were asked for by a court. The other time was right before Senate Democrats took control of the legislature. So, you know, redistricting, as we've said many times, one of the biggest bills they take up every decade, and because it controls who's going to be in charge of the legislature. And this is, you know, a sign that is, while the fight over the map may be over, you know, the fight over what happened in the drawing of the map is still is ongoing.
In other lawsuit news, a judge says that a lawsuit against Act 10 involving police officers can proceed?
Yeah, this is interesting. This is the State Department of Justice wanted to put a stay on this lawsuit because there's other cases ongoing. You know, the Milwaukee Teachers Inc. case, or Madison Teachers Inc. case, excuse me, involving municipal employees that struck down significant portions of the collective bargaining law. But the judge in this case said, no, this case can proceed because it has a unique set of circumstances. It's brought by the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Association, and some of the plaintiffs include a Capitol police officer, a university police officer, and a state trooper. Only one of those groups, the state troopers, still has all their collective bargaining rights. The others lost theirs with Act 10. And the attorney in that case said that that's a reason that this bill is unconstitutional, that it fractured their union.
During the demonstrations up at the Capitol Police and the UW Police Department and the state troopers were all working side by side, and they had different bargaining rights after the passage of the act.
And that was union attorney Sally Sticks there.
Hey, speaking of protesters at the Capitol, there is what's the latest on this ACLU case about Capitol access?
Yeah, a federal judge heard arguments on that case last week. No audio, can't record in federal court. But one of the questions that U.S. District Judge William Conley, two of the questions he was asking is, are these restrictions on gatherings at the Capitol content driven? And if they are, whether they're more favorable or not to political speech, they could be unconstitutional on their face. The other question that he really seemed interested in is, if you are going to have some type of restrictions on size of groups you can have at Capitol before you have to get a permit, what's the appropriate number for demonstrators? What's the appropriate demonstration size? The state says if you get four people, you've got to get a permit. He had almost an incredulous reaction to that number. He pressed the ACLU for what a better number might be, and they seemed to suggest 50 might be better. So we'll see what happens there.
We will. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio, state government reporter. We'll check news, and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network.